Pit Stop, Tampa Bay. Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in the Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Brought to you by Speedway Digest, Talladega Super Speedway, and Talladega Short Track. Over the last few weeks, myself and Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest, have been going through a little bit of restructuring. And he's agreed to start the Speedway Digest Radio Network. And the number to call in is 215-383-3681. We're live from Talladega, Alabama at 6:05 Central Time, 7:05 Eastern Time. We have Mr. Robin Pemberton scheduled, Vice President of Competition for NASCAR. And at the bottom half of the hour, 6:30 Central Time, 7:30 Eastern Time, we have Ms. Jennifer Jo Cobb, driver of the Mark 1 Electric NASCAR Camping World Truck Series truck and the truck series. And I want to bring on Stephen Wilson, the gentleman that has made all this happen. Stephen, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, buddy?
I'm doing good, buddy. Doing good. And I want to give a big shout-out to you for taking your spare time and, you know, doing this for me and you and Suzanne and Miss Anne Marie. And I think the sky's the limit, buddy. We'll just see what happens, and we never know. But, what's your take on the race this past weekend at Kansas, Steve?
Well, it was a little bit different than we normally see, just with them going there at night racing at Kansas for the first time. You know, it kind of come out where I thought that the tires last week, I was talking with Joseph last week that, you know, I thought the tires would be the issue, and it seemed like some teams had an issue with the tires and other teams just did not again. I think it just all comes back down to, I think we're still seeing teams out there trying to really run aggressive setups out there, and I don't think it's 100% Goodyear's fault for what we're seeing with the tread patterns on the tires when they're coming off the cars, and, you know, the team's just going to have to go away from the more aggressive setups. Good thing is, I guess we didn't have any penalties out there this weekend, so that's good to see.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, penalties is good to see, and I've got a good question for Mitch Love, my friend, when he comes on. But yeah, you know, you were talking about the setups and everything, but I mean, could you imagine running that fast around Kansas like they've been running? And you know, Robin mentioned, you know, a few weeks back they're going to try to choke them down a little bit as far as the horsepower. But I mean, you know, that's a that right there is getting some yonder on Kansas Speedway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a fast track out there to begin with. So, you know, all in all, the competition out there this weekend was fairly decent that we were seeing. We were seeing leaders being able to get out front, but then second, third, fourth, fifth place being able to run the leaders down either about 1 or 2 tenths a second per lap. So the competition this weekend, you know, all in all for Kansas was, you know, better than we've seen in the past few years. And it's just getting increasingly better as the track starts to wear in.
Yeah, I would agree, Steve. And, you know, our guest at the bottom half of the hour, Ms. Jennifer Jo Cobb, she finished 13th Friday night in that NASCAR Camping World Truck Series at Kansas Speedway, and she moved up to 12th in points. Her and Mr. Steve Kuykendall, looks like they fit on something this year.
Yeah, you know, last year with Jennifer Jo Cobb, with some of the issues that they had, you know, with people stealing some of their equipment, some of the things they were going through with the legal system kind of set them back a little bit last year. But it seems like this year, you know, they've kind of gotten past a little bit of that. And definitely, you know, this weekend she was, you know, very silent out there. We didn't really hear a whole lot out of her this weekend, but she ended up, like you said, she finished 12th out there this weekend. And, you know, it wasn't something that you normally see. So I think they're definitely onto something different now that they've gotten past some of the issues they had last year.
I do too, Steve. And, you know, me and Steve Kuykendall has talked to me. They've got, a pretty good sponsor that's going to stick with them, and it's giving him more resources to work on the car. And Jennifer Joe's been working on the car with him. You know, she gets right down and dirty with him. And I got a text from him earlier. I sent him a text. I said, Steve, you got the call-in number? He said, yes, I got it. He said, Jennifer's working on the car right now. I said, let her keep going, but don't let her miss the show.
Yeah, no, definitely, and that's what she needs. You know, she's a heck of a mechanic out there. I mean, you can't take anything away from her or what her abilities are. And I mean, she's a good race car driver. It's just I think that, you know, they've just had these setbacks here in the last year or so, and they just haven't had the sponsorship that it really takes to run that team. And you know, it looks like they're kind of turning that corner now.
Yeah, that's right, And that's good, you know, for our sport and for the women in the sport, you know. And Danica had a heck of a daggum run at Kansas, too. I mean, what'd she finish? They went 6th, 7th?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she was running up there pretty much top 5, top 8, pretty much all night long. I mean, she was out there battling with Denny Hamlin, Dale Earnhardt Jr., and the rest of the guys running up front. She had the speed and she had the car. She definitely kept it up there throughout the entire race.
Yeah, she did, and I mean, you know, that's, and you know, Stuart Haas, you know, Tony had a good run, Kevin had a good run, she had a good run. Poor old Kurt Busch seemed like he hit everything with the pace car.
yeah. Unfortunately, I think a lot of those guys had some issues out there this weekend.
Yeah, I do too. And while we're waiting on Robin Pemberton, Jeff Gordon got a win. So, speak of the devil. Steve, we want to bring in Mr. Robin Pemberton. Mr. Robin Pemberton, Vice President of Competition for NASCAR. Mr. Pemberton, you're in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're doing good, Robin. And we want to thank you for taking the time to, you know, call in to our little old NASCAR talk show that we've got. And I know you're on a limited schedule. You hadn't got all that long, but I've got one question I'd like to ask, and then I'll hand you over to my co-host, Stephen. A couple of years ago, you know, you had come out and said, said the phrase, "Boys have at it." And, you know, now I'm not criticizing it for what you did. I think what you did was the greatest thing, you know, to do, because, you know, you can't have drivers and crews fighting up and down pit road when you got kids and family members, you know, family around there to watch the race. But I had heard some of my NASCAR friends, you know, say that, you know, NASCAR says, you know, boys have at it, but then again, they want to penalize them. And what is your take on, which I know you have to do what you got to do, Robin, but what is your take on, a lot of them say that the media, when they show it after the race, it's sort of like a double-edged sword. Am I correct, Robin?
Yeah, it is. It's a double-edged sword, but, you know, we do, you know, we've got a large fan base, and they range from children up to, you know, adults that are at least my age. And, you know, at the end of the day, boys have at it means running hard, racing hard, and rubbing fenders and doing what you have to do to win a race. And it doesn't mean that you can, you know, we draw the line when you close fist, hit a guy. And, you know, that's something that that's not right anywhere that you go. And so, you know, it's tough because, you know, you'll see that clip be run, you know, people that have access to that type of thing. You know, they'll run it for an advertisement or they'll take a picture of it and they'll run it, you know, as a still photo. And so it's tough. It's a double-edged sword, but, you know, we have to draw the line when somebody closes their fist and takes a cut at a guy and connects. So, you know, it's some of the things that we have to deal with, you know, but it still does not mean that it's not boys have at it, because I think it's, you know, that's one of the best things we've done over those recent years.
Yes, sir. And I want to applaud you, Robin, and for NASCAR for doing what y'all have done for our sport. And just one more little quick question. You know, you were talking about the closed fist, and you know what I'm going to bring up. Marcus Ambrose punching Casey Mears at Richmond. But now, say if there was not a punch thrown, if it was just pushing and shoving, there would probably be no fines or penalties brought down to them, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thank you, Rob. And Robert, I want to hand you over to my good friend and co-host, Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest out of Martinsville, Virginia. Stephen, you got the floor with Mr. Robin Pemberton, Vice President of Competition in NASCAR.
Well, Robin, thank you for coming on tonight. I want to start off real quick, something that Darrell Waltrip said over the weekend. They were talking in Kansas about the night race and the potential, you know, for next year. You know, there's a lot of rumors that there's going to be some major shakeups there on the schedule. Well, Darrell Waltrip made a comment there where he said that maybe even a midweek race should be something that NASCAR looks at, even if it's an experimental race. I know last year you guys, you know, went out there to Eldora in a truck series and took the trucks run in Bristol on Wednesday night. Looking forward, is that something that NASCAR is making the consideration of, or do you think that just because of the logistics of it, the fans that, you know, have to take off the time from work and the logistics of getting from somewhere on a Sunday to get to a Wednesday race is just too overwhelming for NASCAR and the teams and the fans to take on?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. So I'm not going to say yes or no, but what I will do is explain that, you know, we've got a lot of partners that we have to satisfy. You've got racetracks, you've got TV partners, and we have the fans to consider. So, you know, and you can sit around the campfire and talk about all these what-ifs situations. You know, how nice it would be to run, you know, Wednesday night races all summer long and things like that. But when you have to look at weather reports and you have to look what it's going to take to be successful and what would happen if you had an event that was postponed a day or 2 days during the week or on the weekend leading into a weekday race, you'd put a lot of things at jeopardy. So to do things like that, it would take a pretty big overhaul of different rules and regulations, and whether it's right or wrong, you know, you'd have to get down to a one-day schedule or a two-day schedule at places, and so there's a lot of work that goes into it. So the answer to that question is we look at a lot of different things all the time, and you have to do what makes the most sense for everyone, and you take a lot of things into consideration. So, you know, the Wednesday night schedules have been talked about quite a bit over the years. And I'm sure people will continue to talk about them. But there's a lot more that goes into running a race on Wednesday night than to just show up at 7 o'clock Wednesday morning and say, let's get it'd take a lot of work to get it all done. And anything's possible. I would say it's stuff that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, that was a good question by Steve. All right, I'm Steve from back. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. You know, and my other question that I had for you guys is that, you know, you've revamped the penalty schedule as of this year. Was that something that necessarily came from NASCAR and the teams, or did you think that this was something that you guys did for the fact to help out the fans and kind of more understand what you guys do and put the penalties out there each week for the drivers and the teams?
Yeah, that's, you know, some of the things that we have been through over the course of time, you know, the penalties, when you penalize somebody, everybody shares some of the responsibility. But what was going on sometimes is sponsors felt like they were being brought into a negative light. There might have been some other things that were not fair to different entities within the sport. So when we do a penalty, you'll see that it will be listed as the driver of car number whatever or the crew chief of car number whatever, and then we'll label it as a P1 through a P6 penalty, and then whatever it takes to do that. So we're trying to distance the penalty from the sponsors, you know, the car manufacturers, and all of those things, where it's just the responsibility of the whoever had the infraction, you know, crew chief, driver, you know, engine builder, that type of thing. So that was some stuff that we worked on all of, a lot of last year when we were working on the new chase format and the new, you know, and the new qualifying format. So we had a lot of work we did, but the penalty situation was something that we took a lot of pride in as far as trying to help the teams, protect themselves when something did happen.
And just one more real quick question is, you know, there's a lot of talk also about you guys looking at the engines and, you know, you being an engineer from way back in the series. What exactly kind of conversations have y'all talked about as far as the engines removing horsepower from them? I know that Carrie Tharp had been on a couple of weeks ago and was talking about it, but, you know, I'd like to get your take on it being from the engineering aspect onto it. Is it something that you guys are going to look at removing RPMs from the motor, or is it something that y'all are looking in the throttle bodies and making them smaller, or where exactly is NASCAR's thought on this right now?
Well, we're looking at a lot of things right now, and one of the things is really trying to that runs a lot of this stuff is trying to contain the escalating costs for the car owners. You know, you try to stop, maintain, and then probably try to reduce long term what the cost is, so we can keep our car owners healthy. So the things that you look at, and in particular when you're talking about engine programs that are with the Cup and the Nationwide and the Truck Series, you know, there's been a consolidation of engine companies over the years because it is so costly to build engines. And so you have big engine companies like Hendrick Motorsports that builds engines for Harry Scott and the 51 and their own teams, and then Stuart Haas, and then they have Nationwide engine programs for JR Motorsports. And so that's a lot of car numbers to cover, and you look at the Roush Yates engines, and it's Front Row Motorsports, and it's Richard Petty Motorsports, and Roush Racing, and Penske Racing, and then all the Nationwide and truck programs that go along with that. So when you start to save $1,000 here and $1,000 there, it adds up in a hurry. So some of the things you look at when you bring these engine companies together is like, and we have a really open forum, and it's something that really is on the heels of the Gen 6 car development program, where we bring large groups together that represent the manufacturers and the teams, and we discuss what would make them healthy. We discuss, you know, different options. And, you know, we had talked about smaller engines. We had talked about throttle bodies and reduced horsepower and RPM and things of that nature. And so we've got another, actually tomorrow afternoon, we have one of our engine meetings. We have one once a month. And the teams were off building prototypes and getting time on them to see what they feel roller camshafts and roller lifters and things like that. If it can reduce horsepower a little bit, we're okay or not okay. It's not a big hitter. But if it allows us to save some money on the drive or on the powertrain, and then if we can reduce some RPM, it saves us some money on the powertrain, then we can take that and we look long term and see if we can't get more mileage out of the engine. Instead of a rebuild every 600 or 700 miles, maybe we can get it to 1,500 miles, where it can run two complete events. And so therefore it can cut the cost down by 20% or something like that. So that's the things that we're interested in. And you know, early on, everything was on the table, horsepower and all kinds of things. And so we're still in the process of narrowing all that down, and we hope to have a decision by mid-year on all of that. One, it is good for the engine houses, good for the teams. And we don't want to screw up our show, because we also think that the racing that we have right now is the best racing that we've ever had. It's very competitive, and so we don't want to screw that up either. So we've got to keep a good balance on all of that. But we're still in the talking process, and a lot of things are still on the table, and we'll be weeding them out over the next few weeks.
That sounds good, Robin. And Robin, I want to applaud you and NASCAR and Kerry Tharp and everybody, Christy King, for everybody. Y'all do a great job for it. And I know a lot, you know, you got your pros and cons. You got your fans that don't agree with this, fans that don't agree with that. But, I mean, you know, it's just part of it. And Robin, I know you said your time is limited, but the phone lines have lit up. Can you take one quick question from one of the NASCAR fans?
Absolutely, and I'm on my cell phone, so if I don't hear it clearly, I'll ask you to repeat it to me. Is that okay?
Yes, sir. That's fine, Robin.
All right.
I'm gonna bring.
That's fine.
I'm gonna bring. Thanks, bud. I'm gonna bring Sean Estrada. Sean, you're in the pit stop with Tim Spaney, Stephen Wilson, and Mr. Robin Pemberton. Do you have a question?
Hi, Robin.
Hey there.
Hi, Robin. First of all, I think you do a great job. People don't realize you've been around this sport and been crew chief and done it all. That's where you have the wisdom. So my question is, say the new drivers compared to the old drivers, if you put them on the old Darlington when she was a lady in black, who would win? And what is your favorite moment in NASCAR?
My favorite moment in NASCAR?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. When you talk about Darlington, you can't help but to talk about David Pearson and Richard Petty. Pearson was a master. Cale Yarborough, those guys had a technique to wrestle the cars around. And it's funny you say this. We were there was a bunch of us together at a function the other day, and we got talking about how nice the new cars are, all the suspension stuff, and all the – I mean, they're like Swiss watches. I mean, they're just beautiful. And how lucky that the drivers are today to be able to drive them. And so when you look back in the day, you look at Cale, and, you know, Cale was one of those guys where you get it close, and then he's going to make up the difference, you know. And Pearson was a guy who the reason he won races is he understood his equipment, and he was always there at the very end. Him and Richard Petty were probably two of the best at that. So, you know, they didn't blow their engines up. They didn't wreck anything. They didn't break anything. So they were good on their strategy from the steering wheel side of it. And that's different than today. These guys that drive today, they are wide open from the time you throw the green flag to the checkered flag falls. And that's why you see them. They get out by a straightaway, and then they fall back a little bit. But they drive hard every almost every lap. I would say so. It's I'd say you put the King and the Silver Fox in their heyday back when they were in their late 30s or something like that. I'll tell you what, I think they give some of these kids a little run for their money. I really do. And for my favorite moment in the sport. Now, are you talking personally or are you talking just in general?
Personally, even when you were working like crew chief. Or even when you were as a kid, or just any time that your moments, you said, "Hey, I really love
well,
that."
Well, I will tell you this story, and I don't share it very often, but I feel like I need to. When I was a kid, and I'm from upstate New York originally, and it is in where I was from, and all there was pine trees. I was almost halfway between New York City and Canada. Okay, and so back in the day, back in the 60s and the early 70s, the cup teams now, which would have been just the Grand National Division then, they did what they called the Northern Swing. You remember when they ran 65 races a year back in those days. And so my childhood friend, which at the time I was only – is Pete Hamilton that went to drive for the Petty Enterprises, and he was a driver and ate at my dad's restaurant when I was only like, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. So when they made that Northern Swing, Richard Petty stayed at the local motel across the street from my dad's restaurant, and then all us kids on our Stingray bikes and all that stuff rode up to the local speed shop that he was working on his car because they were racing at the local track that weekend. And Richard spent hours with us kids talking to us. And because of that, that was like 1969 and 1970. They were there 2 years. and because of that, that's why I thought that working on a race team and working in racing would be something that would be cool. Cause I was even as a young kid, I was a big fan of cars and race cars and things like that. And so when I met him when I was 12 years old, little did I know that 10 years later I'd be working for him in North Carolina. I packed up my stuff, left home with about $60 in my pocket, moved to the Carolinas, and went to work on race cars at Petty Enterprises. And so the day that I met the King up close and personal left a big enough impression on me that I took that with me, and I'm standing here today as the Vice President of Competition for NASCAR. So a lot of stuff can happen in 45 years, right? So that was a big day for me. Changed my life.
Thank you for all you
yes,
do
welcome.
Because you make a lot of wishes come true by making NASCAR what it is, because people get to go to the races. And like me, I got to meet Richard Petty like 10 years ago, and that was the best moment for me also.
Yeah.
But just thank you for everything you do.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And you know, and there's other stories that are like that throughout the East. I mean, you know, I think most people know Brad Daugherty's story. You know, when Brad was a kid up in Asheville and the King and him were racing up there, he said that the King waited around till every kid's autograph was sold or it was signed or, you know, picture or whatever. And because of that, Brad Daugherty rode, he wore number 43 when he played in the NBA. I mean, that's the impression that the King makes on people. And I don't think he's appreciated. He's appreciated, but I really don't think he understands the difference he's made in so many people's lives over the years. And I'm thankful that I met a man, and I'm thankful that him and I are friends today. He's made all the difference in the world to a lot of people.
All right. Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank you, Tim, for letting me talk to him. And thank y'all both for everything you do for NASCAR. It's the greatest sport in the world. It's a lifestyle.
Yes. Thank you. I think
you're
so,
welcome,
too.
Sean. You're welcome,
thank
Sean.
You.
And Mr. Robin, I know you've got you probably need to go. But I just want to, you know, you're talking about old school. Back in the day when I was a teenager, in the early 80s, you know, we used to get to check out of school and go out to Talladega Super Speedway, and we got to sit in the Union 76 balls. You know, we couldn't sit in there, you know, we couldn't do it when there was a race going on. Well, you know, we got to, you know, spot and all that, and I worked for Enix Daily back then, and he was going to fly me and Suzanne, my wife, up to Wilkesboro. He said, Tim, I know y'all fishing get married. He said, why don't y'all fly up to Wilkesboro? I said, Mr. Staley, I can't afford it. He said, I want to fly y'all up, put in 15,000 new seats. I want y'all come up. That'll be my wedding present. I said, okay, Mr. Staley. Well, it wasn't long. It wasn't long, Robert. You know, Mr. Staley passed. And I hated that I didn't get to go, but I did meet a good friend. And, Robin, is there anything you would like to throw out as far as NASCAR, or you got the floor if you want to talk about something, or if you need to go, you want
to
go?
Well, the only thing that I'm going to throw out there is I believe we got the best race fan in the world for any sport, hands down, anywhere in the world. And I know we've all been on tough times over the past few years, but things are coming around, and you know, when you look at all of a sudden the grandstands are starting to fill back up again, and you see them smiling faces coming through the gate, and you see all those campers that are out there that are camping. Talladega was a great show and had an incredible crowd, best crowd I've seen there in 5 or 6 years. And so I just want to thank all the fans for doing what they do and coming out. And I know that for a long time they had to watch on TV when they could, and I know some couldn't even do that. But, you know, they followed us, and when they're able to come back, they come back, and it shows that we're hands down the luckiest sport in the world, and we're hands down we've got the best fans in the world. And I just want to thank each and every one of them for what they do every weekend and tuning in on TV and showing up at the track. And I just think it's great to have fans like that.
Yes, sir. Amen, Mr. Robin. And tell Miss Christy King I said hello. Tell Mr. Kerry Thorpe
I'll do that.
Hello, and I'm sure Suzanne, my wife, want to say hello to Kerry because Kerry took up to her outfit. But Robin, thanks again for coming on our show. And don't be a stranger. If you want to come on again anytime in the future, I'll get with Christy and we can talk about it.
Okay, perfect. That's perfect, and I appreciate it.
All right,
you all have a good you all have a good evening now, and stay tuned for this All-Star race. It could be a barn burner.
All Oh, yes, sir, we will.
Okay, take care now. Thanks, Tim.
Yes, sir, you too, Robin.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye. Well, Stephen, that was Mr. Robin Pemberton. He had some thoughts. My throat's going. He had some thoughts, Stephen, and, you know, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour waiting on Jennifer Jo Cobb, driver of the Mark One electric Chevrolet from NASCAR Tempo World Truck Series. But what's some of your thoughts right quick about, you know, you asked him about how they were going to choke the motors down. He had some good opinions, didn't he, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I kind of asked him those opinions. He comes back from the engineering days back in the old school where they would do anything they could to, you know, get some extra horsepower out of them motors. And I think he's a good person to have on the forefront of looking at some of the things. He knows how these engines work. He knows what kind of cost goes into them and what kind of capital outlay these teams have, not only, you know, just in the smaller teams, but even in the larger teams that have to build these motors at $35,000, $40,000 a piece, you know, even more depending on the series that they're running in. And, you know, he's got a lot of good ideas, and I think, you know, it's gonna show. I mean, NASCAR over the last couple of years definitely have done a lot of good things with the cars. We saw that. We're seeing that this year with the Gen 6 car that they brought out there on track. And as we go into the future of the sport, you know, the motors are the next thing in this evolution that we're going to look at. And I think once we can get them down to a more economical level where the teams are not having the outlay that they have currently, but we're still producing the same racing experience out there on track for the fans and the drivers, that's going to be a good thing for the sport, and it's going to help out some of these teams that just, you know, are not able to get some of the better equipment, and they're having to go to second-party suppliers.
Yeah, exactly right, Steve. You know, you're referring to the starting parts, and you can't really blame them. I mean, you know, because they're very underfunded teams, and they're doing what they can do. And for a lot of our fans that are tuning in new, the starting part is they have to start to receive their prize money, and then they park it to save that car, truck for the next weekend because they can't afford to get out there and get in a wreck or big wreck or something, you know, like here at Talladega, because they just can't afford to build it back. And to touch on what Robin Pemberton said earlier, you know, I talked to him here at Talladega Super Speedway. He was super nice. And me and myself and Suzanne on a Sunday, when we were standing down there, Suzanne said, look up there, Tim said, the stands are full. And just like Robin said, you know, I hadn't seen that in 5 or 6 years. And myself and Suzanne hadn't either. I mean, it was a super crowd. Grant Lynch, Russell Brennan, Price Mason, that whole bunch of Talladega Super Speedway, they put a lot into everything that went on with the new Alabama game backstretch, and they had the new big four jumbotrons, the sprint vision that you could see, and they had all kinds of it. They had a moon pie eating contest. They had a barbecue sauce wrestling thing that, you know, was later than us old folks would stay up and go to. But anyway, Stephen, we have We have Miss Jennifer Jo Cobb, driver of the Mark One Electric number 10 truck in the NASCAR Camper World Truck Series. Miss J.J. Cobb, you're in the pit stop. Tim Disdain and Stephen Wilson. How you doing, ma'am?
Hi, doing great. How are y'all?
We're doing good. We're doing good. And I want to congratulate you on a good run at Kansas.
Thank you.
You're welcome, man. You moved up to 12th in points, and me and Stephen were talking about you earlier before we had Robert Pemberton on. And we were talking about how you and Steve Kalkenbauer, you know, your hops sort of clicked this year and everything's going well. Is there anything you'd like to talk about for sponsorships, or is the sponsor going to stay the same? And how's your truck going to be at Charlotte this Friday night?
Well, you'll see a myriad of sponsors, just like you see us race a myriad of makes and models of trucks. And, you know, Steve is, you know, kind of the one constant, the guy that really makes it happen for us. And I just can't say enough about all the hard work that he puts into it. And it's not just work, it's dedication and you know, just so much hard work and heart. And you don't always get that. You know, some people are just in it for a paycheck, and that's certainly not the case. You know, he'll do whatever it takes to make sure that we keep going as a team. And so last year was just a huge survival year for us, and we proved, you know, not just Steve, he wasn't even with us for the first half of the year, you know, just some really great people stepped up into our lives and helped us get through. And toward the end of last year, we had Grimes Irrigation and Construction, and they were kind of like angels that just lifted us up. And we met some other smaller sponsors in Texas that carried us through Phoenix and Homestead. And once we got through, you know, through that, we really kind of felt like something. Steve kept saying, there's something special happening here. And he said, I don't know what, but I just really feel like, you know, we got to make it. And we knew Daytona was going to be a big opportunity for us. And we have this partnership with Reeds Across America. And through that partnership, there are some sponsors that have stepped up and that have helped us out in that. And, you know, just so grateful to be surrounded by such wonderful people all the time. It seems like we look left and we look right, and it doesn't matter what racetrack we're at, we're surrounded by a whole new group of great people. And I just feel like I wish I could remember everyone's name to list them all, but just even individuals, you know, Tom Newman and Mike Nemo and Bill and Earlene Burley that are behind us right now. We're trying to go get the crew some dinner so we can get back to the shop and just really be on our game here for Charlotte. And all the volunteers, we have so many volunteers that have showed up over the winter to help keep this team going and get these trucks together. And really, we just hired our first person outside of Steve and I that actually gets a paycheck last week.
That's cool, Jennifer Jo. Yes, ma'am, that's cool. And I got one more little quick question, and it probably, you know, I've been keeping up with you and Stephen Cockendale, and I want to congratulate you on what you were writing on the battery box on the truck. If you want to hit on that a minute, if you want to talk about that, that's fine. I just wanted to, that's cool.
Well, I think that it's a good opportunity to talk about, you know, faith in racing, and MRO is the Motor Racing Outreach, and they provide a chapel service for, you know, drivers, crew members, guests. I always bring my VIP guests into the driver's meeting and ask them to stay for chapel if they'd like. And so all kinds of small racetracks provide that support. And MRO happens to be the NASCAR group, and they take donations to help stay there. So, you know, it's a great opportunity to say, hey, please support them. But even your local racetrack has a track chaplain in ministry. And so it's important if you're a local driver to please support them as well. And we had a track chaplain at I-70 Speedway whose name was Ralph Lee. And he would walk around in the pit area before every race and tell everyone that he could see, shake their hand, and say, Jesus loves you. And the responses that he would get would be really funny. You know, they would range from, you know, and I love him too, or well, thank you, to, oh, no, he doesn't love me. And that would give Ralph an opportunity to really talk to that person and find out what's going on in their life and why they would think that, et cetera, et cetera. So when I fabricated my first battery box, it was just like, you know, made with love by Jen, ha, ha, ha. And then Steve said, hey, you did such a great job on that other battery box. Why don't you make me another one? And so I made another one, and this one I put, thinking about Ralph Lee, Jesus loves you, and then I put dot, 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 yes, even you. And I just thought, yes, you know, what a wonderful place to put that where team members will see it. We have weekend warrior team members that come over and crew our truck, and maybe that left rear tire changer will see it, and officials will crawl under there looking around the truck, and they'll see it. And it's just kind of thought it was a neat place, because I get proud of it after I paint it black and make it look pretty. Then I pull out the hot pink tire marker, and I wrote that.
Yeah, I've seen that. And, you know, Steven texted me. I said, yeah, I've seen it. I'm sharing the pictures. I said, that's cool. But yeah, Jennifer, I know your time's limited because you and Steven are working on the car. I want to introduce you to my co-host and CEO of Speedway Digest, and you're on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Mr. Steven Wilson.
Hey,
hello,
Jennifer.
Mr. Wilson. Hi.
How are you doing tonight?
Great, thank you.
Good.
you know, last year you guys kind of hit a lot of rough patches out there, and it just seemed like anything that could happen did happen to you guys. And this year you've kind of renewed the energy in the team. You know, obviously this weekend you guys had a decent run out there at Kansas Speedway, even though that you got such little TV time. You know, it was after the race they were talking about you being running up there in the top 15 most of the race. And do you think, you know, you guys have gotten passes, and what's the spark that kind of turned the corner for this year to get that energy back in the team?
Well, geez, I mean, people stopped stealing stuff out of our parking lot in our shop. That was a huge plus. You know, it's no secret what happened to us last year. We were absolutely bullied and crimes committed against our team and, you know, just a bunch of junk, you know, period. It was wrong and it was stupid, and nothing makes me happier to have overcome that and to be even stronger than we were before all that bullying started. So I'll tell you, that's the biggest spark is the, you know, police finally stepped in and said, listen, you can't just come take her stuff. So that was a huge part of it. You know, the next part of it is, you know, as you go through the rebuilding process, well, you tend to end up with a little bit better stuff than you had. So although 90% of what was taken from us was never returned, wonderful people and sponsors have stepped up and bought us newer, better stuff. So it's almost like we had to dip way down into the valley to propel up the mountain and become better. So if we wouldn't have been bullied and, you know, all these crimes committed against our team, we might be right back where we were. But instead, you know, God always has a way of taking like bad things and turn them around. You just might have to go through some really, really hard times in the middle. And that's exactly what's happening to us, is the things that we have are better than what we had in 2012 because people really saw what was happening and you know, finally on one hand put a stop to it, and on another hand started helping us rebuild. And the biggest thing is engines. You know, so Grimes Irrigation Construction bought us a fresh SV2 engine from Mark Smith's PME at the beginning of this season. And then we had another wonderful connection come along with an ECR engine for our second truck that's an SV2 as well. So we're doing as well as we're doing, still on some secondhand equipment, but what we were running before was like third, fourth, and fifth-hand equipment, you know. And if you don't realize, SV2 is kind of the last-generation Chevy engine, but having a fresh SV2 is 10 times better than what we were trying to deal with before. So last year was just a year to sort of show up and get through it, and then this year is our year to show that, you know, we've overcome it. And I'd like to think that by now we have the confidence we can overcome just about anything. And it's just, it's that much more rewarding. It's that much more thrilling. And Steve and I feel really on top of the world. And the further someone tries to hold us down, the further we feel like we'll bounce back up.
And, you know, you guys are one of the smaller teams out there. What are some of the biggest hurdles that you guys are seeing out there? I know NASCAR, you know, we had Kerry Tharp on here a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how they now have a department out there that helps out with some of the smaller teams and goes out there and kind of lends a hand on getting these sponsorships.
Do they really? Because that department needs to call me.
yeah, actually he did. We were talking about sponsorship, and we were talking about sponsorship, you know, in some of the smaller teams, and he made mention of this, that, you know, that was something that they started working on within their IMC department. You know, aside from that, I mean, what you feel is the biggest hurdle out there for you guys? Because, you know, I talking with Kyle Busch a couple months ago, he said that he was getting in the 51 truck just to make sure that Darrell Wallace Jr. had full-time sponsorship, and that kind of is a trickle-down effect when you have to get star power like that. So what is the biggest hurdle that you guys are seeing as a small team to get those sponsorships in place?
Well, the biggest hurdle that I personally have is, you know, time, being able to afford labor, you know, being able to keep up with everything. Because once I start posting on our Facebook page, hey, we offer these sponsorships ranging from individual sponsorships at $250 up to, you know, being on our hood for $15,000, you know, then we start getting a lot of interest. But then you've got to invest the time to, you know, explain what that is and tell people. And trust me, nothing makes me happier than to do that. But then I'm pulled away to do the shopping for the team or the admin for the team and, you know, make sure our entries are in. And when someone buys a T-shirt off our website, I'm the one, that's my handwriting on the envelope, you know, when you buy a T-shirt or a hat from our website, I'm the one that does all that. So for me, it's time. And I think if you made that monetary, it would just be, you know, the labor. It's a big expense to have labor. And we're just so thrilled to take volunteers and NTI students and people who want to learn about the sport that are in the North Carolina area that help us out. From a pure racing, if, you know, I'm just a driver and not really talking about an owner, what would help me be more competitive at the track from a dollar standpoint? Our biggest expense is tires. It's the biggest differentiator. We simply can't afford five sets of tires a weekend, which is $10,000, when the race pays anywhere from $6,500 to $10,000 to start. And I finished 13th and made $10,900. And, you know, we went through a good $6,000 to $8,000 worth of tires to make that happen. And so, you know, you definitely have to have the sponsorship to make it, you know, to make it work. And that's, you know, not, we didn't tear any equipment up. We put about $4,000 worth of wear and tear on the engine just in a natural rebuild process. You have to rebuild it every 4 to 5 races, and it costs, you know, anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 to rebuild, plus that expensive oil that we use in it, you know. So, you know, the engine cost and the tire cost is the two, that's the two biggest expenses. And I wish there was a way that, you know, tires that you're only going to run for 40 to 60 laps could be less than $2,200 a set. That's just the biggest thing. And I understand it takes a lot of development, and I'm happier than ever when I get a new set and feel like they're worth every penny, but I just wish that we could somehow figure that expense out.
And just one more real quick question here for you. Have you guys ever looked into partnering or an alliance with another smaller team to kind of help out with some of not only the admin costs, but maybe the engineering side of the trucks that go out there on the weekends?
I think every single year, other than this year, we tried to have some sort of an alliance or partnership with a team, and it bit me in the butt so hard and set us back so much. The sport is just, it's hard. It's tough in that regard because there's a lot of small teams out there, you know, that are looking out for themselves and they're not necessarily looking out for you. So a quick Google search can show you what forming with other small teams has done for me. So we have great friendships with other small teams. We have great relationships with the reputable teams in this sport will stay around and they'll be racing. And, you know, those are the guys that we lean on them, they lean on us, we probably lean on them more than they lean on us, and those are the teams like SS Greenlight Racing and Bobby Dodder have been just wonderful to us, and Bobby Newberry's team, NTS, has been just really great. They'll take off, you know, it seems like they took off a couple of Brendan Newberry's noses, and they shipped them down to us so that we would have them if we wanted to run our Chevy truck on the short track and use that nose. You know, my boyfriend works for KBM, and, you know, to the extent possible, he lends help without getting himself in trouble because they have a contract with Toyota and all that good stuff. So he has limitations on what he can and can't do. So we have so many awesome relationships with small teams, but actually forming alliances in terms of partnerships and being in the same building, I just don't recommend it, and it just doesn't work.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming on here tonight, and good luck this Friday night at Charlotte.
All right. Thank you, guys. I feel like we should have another good run. Steve is we just stepped away to get the team dinner, but he's finding things left and right to make the truck even better, so I'm pretty darn excited about it.
Jennifer,
well,
thank you
luck.
Very much for being on the show. And, yeah,
all right.
Yes.
All right. And I got to mention, you guys – you guys mentioned last week's sponsors. Mark One Electric was our primary sponsor last week, and this week's sponsor is RobbieWells2016.com. And, you know, just really, really blessed that we're going into our fourth race of the year, and all four races we've had a primary sponsor on the truck. So I just want to thank everybody who's contributed to that.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome. And, Jennifer, tell us, Steve, to give you at least a supper break. You can't work on the car all night.
No.
The truck.
Well, that's why I feel bad. I'm doing a radio interview and the guys are waiting on me to get their food and get back there. But I told them before they left, I said, listen, guys, I said, there's snacks and there's crackers and this one thing, if you work for my team, you won't go hungry. I usually feed them really, really well. So I'm like, you have all kinds of snacks before I get back. And I don't know that they're worried about it, but I'm like, when people get hungry, they get grumpy. So go ahead and eat.
I know it. Hey, Miss Jennifer, I know you got to go, but I've got this lady that, can you take one fan question for just a second?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right, we're going to bring on Miss Donna DeBoer. You're in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson and Miss Jennifer Jo Cobb. Donna, she can talk to you for just a second, and then she's got to go.
Hey, Jennifer?
Yes.
This is Donna. Remember me and Will DeBoer from Richmond?
Hi,
we were
I do remember you guys.
We were
one and only time to go to Richmond. Yeah.
We just miss you so much because we were there when you raced your last nationwide race, and we don't get to the truck races, but we on Facebook, I'm always following you and always wish you well, and just so proud of you and Steve and everything that y'all have done and turned that team around with all the issues that happened and went on, and we prayed and prayed for you guys, and just know that Lord's in it behind you, and you will prevail, and wish you showed us this week especially. I mean, I know you can drive. You just, if you had the equipment every week and like you did last week, we're going to see you in victory lane soon.
Well, thank you. You know, that faith and that support means so much, and you are, you know, one of, you're recognizable to me because you've been such a great fan for so long. And, you know, people like you stick with our team no matter what, through good times, through bad times, and you kind of get it. You know, when things go wrong, you get it, and we really appreciate that. Not every race fan is that smart or educated, and we understand that as well. You know, I can watch a football game and throw an orange at the TV when the Chiefs somehow lose in the playoffs after being up by so much. No, I'm just kidding. But I know that, you know, we can all be fans, and then we have those teams that we just absolutely love and stick by through and through, and I really appreciate that so much from you guys.
Well, Will and I, you know, we talk about you all the time, and, you know, we, you know, watch all your, you know, your career still, and, you know, follow you very closely, and we wish you and Steve all the best. So tell him hey for us, and we know you're going to get there. And
that means
we're
the
there
world.
Behind
that was
you.
That was worth taking a few extra moments. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. We're trying to get up to Martinsville because that's about the closest to us, so we can see you run. But we are behind you and cheer for you every week. So you stay safe, honey. We love you.
All right, love you too. Thank you.
Okay, bye, hon.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, Miss Donna.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Steve.
Yes.
Great show tonight.
Y'all
yes, take
ma'am.
Care. Bye.
Thank you. And
bye-bye.
Miss Jennifer. I know you got to go because you got to go get them boys something to eat. But anyway, thank you for coming on again. And Stephen's got my cell phone. Steve Cotterhouse got my cell phone. If you ever want to come back on, if you want to come back on next week after the Charlotte race, you're welcome to come on. Well, I might always sit with Stephen and see who he's got. But anyway, J.J. Cobb, thank you very much. Good luck Friday night in Charlotte. Myself, Stephen Wilson, and Susanna are behind you 100%.
All right, thank you so very much, and hopefully we'll be talking soon about another great finish, and just really appreciate the support out there and the great job that you guys are doing for NASCAR, just covering the truck series even just means a lot to us, okay?
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
I appreciate you coming on.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Miss Jennifer Jo Cobb. Stephen, she's pretty swift about talking, too. She knows her stuff, you know, because she has to work on her truck, you know, just like she said. They just hired one employee, and it's one employee and her and Steve Cockendall.
Yeah, I mean, it really takes, you know, it takes a village, you know, to get these teams out there on a weekend. That's definitely, I mean, all the support that comes out there, not only from in the shop, but everything from the road crew to the guys that come there on the weekend and pit the trucks. I mean, it really does. It takes a village out there, and, you know, hopefully in the future, they'll have some better luck and get some good sponsorship out there.
I think they will too, Steven. And, I'm gonna go out there on the limb and I'm gonna say slide over Danica Patrick. Here comes Jennifer Jo Cobb. But Steven, guess who is holding? Mr. Tony. I'm like you, Stephen. I butcher his name every time I say it, so I'm going to say Tony B. Tony B, you're in the pit stop. With
how are you, man?
Stephen and Will. We're doing good. How you doing, bud?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Not doing too bad. Glad to call in and this wonderful radio program that Stephen and Tim got going on, and Suzanne, and got a little bit to talk about, and we can talk about anything you folks want to talk about, actually.
Well, you know, Stephen said the other day, me and him was texting, and Stephen, I'm not throwing you out there on the limb to saw it off, but I done the same thing, Tony. But whenever I tried to, Tony Bajinski, when I tried to say, I just messed it up again. Stephen said the same thing. Stephen said, Tim, I butcher his name every time. But anyway, Stephen, you and Tony B talk a little bit. I'm going to step off the side. Y'all go ahead and have at it.
How you doing, Stephen?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. So we got a lot of stuff going on up there in Indy right now with teams out there practicing. The last couple of days, I think I saw earlier today that there was a little bit of rain short and practice out there.
There was rain short today. One of the biggest things today is E.J. Vizo was in Hinchcliffe's car because he is not going to get to come back until he is cleared on the 15th. And I believe today is the 13th. So, you know, he's still got a couple days to sit out. He caught some debris off Justin Wilson's car in the Indianapolis Grand Prix, and he does have a concussion. It hit him in the front of the helmet. He was taken to the hospital after he got out of the car during the race.
Yeah, that was just kind of a crazy start out there this weekend in the Indy GP. I didn't actually get to watch the race, but I've seen some of the clips out there. And that kind of brings me to my question I have for you. Are these standing starts a good thing, or should they go back to the NASCAR-style running start?
In my opinion, the running starts are the way that – this series was built upon, and that's the way it should stay. They're not F1. They're not anybody. They're Indy Race. You know, it's not the Indy Racing League. It's, you know, Verizon's there. But standing starts is not good. And, you know, Sebastian's Saavedra, you know, he qualifies on the pole, the car won't go. They said he had an electrical issue.
Yeah, that was just kind of crazy out there. I've never been too much of a fan of that standing start out there. I just always felt like that it would be too big of an issue, and I think this right here may even look at some of the ways that they're going to start these races from now on. But I just want to kind of flip this a little bit and go off on another topic here real quick.
Okay.
Earlier this week, I'm real big into engineering and the internet and, you know, technology. And F1, there is a developer out there in the F1 series that is building an augmented reality helmet with a newly designed car that they're thinking about bringing out, which will allow them, the drivers behind a car will be able to see the slipstream. Now, we all know in NASCAR, with the drafting the way it is, Junior Johnson, Dale Earnhardt really got the gist of the drafting, and they always said that they could see the air flowing over cars. Is this something you think that they should have in the helmets with the augmented reality so that they're able to see the slipstream, or do you think that they should just continue with the way that they are? Because, they, you know, I feel that that's too much of an advantage if they can see what's going on in front of them.
I think they need to keep it the way it is, put it in the driver's hand and their ability, and not what you can see on a screen. And I have to give great credit out to whomever developed the new Corvette that Sam Schmidt, a paralyzed IndyCar driver, is going to take 4 laps prior to the start of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and he is going to drive that car with head movement. And, you know, there is technology and there are some great things out there, but to have it as part of how these cars race, I don't agree with that. I'm sorry. And that comes into a money issue. If Team A doesn't have the money to do what Team B's doing, that's not fair. I want to see these guys based upon the drivers and their ability and their crew, not what's fed through a computer system. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I always thought that, you know, in the realm of the money, as you say, Team A is going to be able to have something better than Team B. Well, you know, back to Indy 500 here, you know, we're going to keep beating this drum until it happens. Kurt Busch going to try and run the double. And he's been out there, and I think last week he ran some laps out there on rookie day, about 223 miles an hour. And the speeds I was seeing over the weekend were in the 221, 222 range. Now that we're seeing that, where do you think that he kind of falls in at? Do you think he's going to do better than expected now that we're seeing the speed charts with the veterans out there running a mile or two slower than he was?
There are some veterans running a mile or two slower than he is, but today he was 12th on the speed chart. He ran a 220.352. Let me tell you, if we're seeing 225s and 224s now, we're going to see a lot more than that come qualifications. And so, therefore, I'm telling you, he's going to have to step up his game. And it's a different racetrack, 5 mile an hour faster. And I'm not saying he can't handle it, but he better get used to it. So if they have the ability, I think they're putting out there close to what they have. Nobody's showing their full hand, but there are cars in the 224, 225 mile-an-hour range. And something is, he has done well in traffic, and he's doing a good job, you know. But that's not a race-winning lap, and that's not a pole position lap, and he's got a ways to go.
Well, looking at, you know, you're right. I don't think they've all given 100% on what they think that they've got out there. Where do you think that he will fall in at when it comes to qualifications, you know, with Andretti Autosport backing him in this venture out there? Where do you feel that they will fall into line at?
Well, you know, Andretti Autosport is, they got a lot of cards in the game. And, you know, with Marco and Ryan Hunter Ray and James Hinchcliffe, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. And I'm not saying that they're not going to put the same work in the same. They'll have meetings and they'll compare notes and setups and this and that. But it comes down to the driver. You've got to be able to, you know, you can have the same setup that Marco or Ryan Hunter Ray is running and it not work for you. I think that he'll be about mid-pack. Be my guess.
And with, you know, him being there with Stuart Haas, with Tony Stewart, that's obviously run this race before, has an open wheel experience out there, do you think it might have been better for him to go out there and maybe have Tony Stewart out there in the field with him? And how much do you think he at this point will be able to lean on Tony Stewart now that they've changed the cars, they've changed the engine since the last time that they've been out there on track and he's run the Indy 500?
Aerodynamically, everything about the car, the DW12, is so much different from what Stewart ran. And you know, motor-wise, same situation. Was Stewart good? Yes, he was. But can you tell somebody, and, you know, this is my line, you can only go over that so much. And if the driver doesn't feel it, he can't do it. Stewart was good. Do I think that it would help if he could follow Stewart out there? Yes, I do. And him having his time, his seat time, following other drivers out there, that's going to be good for him. Because there are veterans out there running, and they're going to show him different lines in different ways. And I'm sure that there's a lot of in-between team talk. The engineers are working with one another, as they usually do. But I can tell you, coming from a team that has won the Indianapolis 500, those engineers don't always tell the other engineers exactly what they have. And I know that to be factual.
And just with him being out there on track, coming from stock car racing and NASCAR, will he get the help from the other teams that you would see in NASCAR when he runs weekly? Has he had the time to build those relationships, or will this take something longer for him to build the relationships in order to get out there and maybe even compete for a win? Because obviously not only your team is going to be able to help you, but other drivers out there on track are obviously, you know, out there going for themselves, but also in a situation that if they can help throughout the race, they will. So will he have that support from the other drivers at this point with his limited experience?
Steven, I don't believe so. I mean, you can look at guys like Simon Pagenaud. He did win the Indianapolis Grand Prix. But Simon Pagenaud does not have the respect of the oval racers that he needs to have. He did not sign into racing IndyCars until 2011. You know, you have to be with these guys. They've got to trust you. It's not you trusting them. They got to trust you before they're going to run with you, because they have a lot at stake as well. And for that very reason, you know, you can't go into NASCAR and be a rookie and expect to get drafting help and people to run with you and be in the same cycles as the leaders. If you're a rookie, it's just not going to happen. No way.
Yeah, that's a lot of good points out there. And I know we're going to keep beating this drum all the way up until the end of the month, and when we can see what he actually does out there in the crowd with the rest of these guys out there, provided he can make it in. And I'm sure that with his experience, he'll make it in. But as you say, he's at best maybe a mid-pack driver, you know, throughout the race.
Right. I absolutely believe that. And as we're talking about IndyCar, I do want to bring up and send prayers out to A.J. Watson's family. I was very blessed. I got to work in a year with A.J. Watson when Leader Card ran the Toshiba car with Randy Lewis. We weren't a front-pack car, but let me tell you, we lost A.J. Watson, and he was an incredible man. He won the Indianapolis 500 six times, and he's an incredible man. And all I have to say is rest in peace, and nobody will ever forget the legend, A.J. Watson.
Amen, Tony.
What?
Yeah,
and,
it's unfortunate.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead and finish your stuff.
No, it's just unfortunate. At 90 years old, we had to lose him. But the man's a legend, and his wisdom and his knowledge that he passed on to many folks. He was a giver. He was a helper. And, you know, AJ was still at the track. That just speaks volumes about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and IndyCar racing and the people that are there. And I just, you know, my heart goes out to AJ's family, and I was very blessed to work a year with the man. And I'll tell you what, guys, Roger Ward's winning Watson Roadster was hanging in the garage when I worked for them in the 80s. And it was fabulous.
Cool. Cool.
So, very good.
Okay. And, Tony, since we're at that point, can we pause your segment? And, you know, we never got to do the invocation. We've got our weatherman, Tim Campbell, on hold. And let's go ahead and do this right quick, gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Let's bow our heads. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them that trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen. Amen, brother.
Amen. Amen, brother. And let's go ahead and do this, since we didn't get to do it at the first. And Mr. Campbell, if you don't mind, Tony, we starting your segment, because we had a lot going on. Let's go ahead and do the national anthem from Talladega Super Speedway, Miss Donna Elkins. Y'all, this right here, this will bring chill. And thank you. And I know this is to your segment, but let's bring Tim Campbell on. Tim Campbell is our weatherman.
Oh, absolutely.
For Tim is in Stillwater, Oklahoma. He's the weatherman for the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Tim, sorry you had to wait because Tony got to talking about any stuff. We all got talking, but nothing. Anyway, Tim, you got the floor. Go ahead, bud.
Oh, that's fine with me. I'm in no hurry. Yeah, I just sitting here watching the rain. Looks like we're going to have, I don't know what we're going to have, really. We're going to have rain on Wednesday and Thursday and chance on partly sunny with a chance of shower in the morning on Friday. But then it's supposed to clear off and be in the partly cloudy in the mid-70s and during Saturday. And so hopefully this rain will move out, or maybe it'll get, won't last as long as it has been, and Sunday is about the same, partly cloudy and high in the 70s, lows in the mid-50s both nights, and let's just hope and pray that we don't have rain.
Yeah.
If it keeps going like it has been out here, every time you turn around, it's raining. And
yeah. Now, that's not the Charlotte forecast, is it, Tim? That's not the forecast for this one.
Yeah, this is Charlotte.
Oh, okay. I did not know we were talking about rain. Well, golly, you're gonna have to push the rain out from Charlotte, Tim.
Yeah, that's what I
don't push it to Indianapolis.
Now, Tim, what about the severe weather threat? I know it's moving my way, but I think we got a minimal. I think we're just gonna get thunderstorms. Is what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's up in, I know Minnesota's getting a bunch of it, and Chicago got hit pretty hard last night, but I'm watching the Alabama and down in there to see what they're doing, and if I get any watches or warnings, I'll post them on the site, and for everybody to see out there in Talladega. And
okay. Thank you very much, Tim. And would you like to ask Tony B a question or Stephen Wilson a question, or would you just like to lay on the side? It's up to you, my friend.
Oh, I think I'm good.
Okay. Well, Tim, NASCAR fans, this is Mr. Tim Campbell. Him and his wife from Stillwater, Oklahoma. They are storm chasers, and they've agreed to come on the show and do our local forecast and the race weekend forecast, and which Tim will tell you, Tim, it's sort of hard to forecast this far out. Am I correct?
Yeah, it'd be – I try to post it on the pit stop the night before on Friday, so that people know what it's going to be, so they know what to take with them and stuff on when they go to the races. So you can always look at the pit stop on Friday and the race forecast usually on there. So Friday morning when you first get up. So
okay.
I usually do that about midnight.
Yeah, and that's when we're in the bed. But yeah, Tim, thank you for coming aboard our new network, the Speedway Digest Radio Network that Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest, has formed, and it took him a few weeks, but I want to give a big shout out, big kudos to Stephen Wilson for taking his time out to do this. And thank you very much for being our weatherman.
Oh, it's a great deal. I love doing it, and I'm glad I can help.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim. Take care.
Okay.
Okay. Gentlemen, Thank you for letting me get that in. We started earlier.
Absolutely.
You come on later, and I had told you, me and Stephen had Robin Pemberton and all that coming on. But anyway, I had heard y'all talking about the Indianapolis 500, and I'm like Stephen. I don't keep up with it that much, but when it comes to race day, I do. And Tony, I want to ask this question. I don't remember if I've asked it, I don't know if Stephen asked it, but it's in the back of my mind. And I heard y'all talking about Kurt Busch maybe finishing middle pack, somewhere like that in the 500 and then flying to Charlotte for the 600. And I cannot remember if I've asked this. I know you have been there. You've been to Victory Lane. You've got Indianapolis 500 championship ring with Dario Franchitti in 2012. What if Kurt Busch wins the Indianapolis 500? I'm just throwing, you got to throw a what if.
I'm going to just tell you.
Go ahead, Tony.
If he wins the race, he will not make it to Charlotte. He will not be in the Coca-Cola 600. The sponsorship and the commitments that the drivers have with the media, the fans, the things they have to do, I would really find that hard to believe. Maybe Mr. Bowles, the CEO at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, would put things aside to accommodate him for the two-hour flight to Charlotte, and that's what I've been told that it is. And I just really, everybody wants that to happen, somebody to win the Indianapolis 500 and compete in the Charlotte Coca-Cola 600. And I don't believe that can happen. The venues are too far away. It's 1,100 miles. And I will, my hands go up for Kurt Busch. He is training to put his body through this, and I congratulate him on that effort. It takes a lot of work, but there's so many things that he can't control. He's not going to fly himself to Charlotte, and the sponsors, the media, the fans, things that have to be taken care of if he does finish well or a podium finish. It's really going to make things hard. And we've yet to see anything like that. And he will be the fourth driver in history to do this.
Yeah. And that's Tony, you're talking about fourth driver. Robbie Gordon, help me out. Robbie Gordon done it, what, twice? Tony
yep.
Stewart done it.
Yep.
And now Kurt, who was the other one, TB? I'm trying to think. I can't remember.
I'm trying to think myself. I actually don't have that in front of me, but did three of them.
Okay. We can put it on the show. Tony, is there anything else you want to talk about? We're going to let Steven. Steven, is there anything that you want to talk to TB about? We're getting close to the end of the show. The callers, we had them lined up, and, I think they sort of went away. But
absolutely.
Tony, is there anything that you would like to lay out on the table?
Well, I do want to put out there, I want to let everybody know that, yes, the state of Indiana is happening with the Indianapolis 500 and the Indianapolis Grand Prix, but USAC is having May 17th, which is Saturday, the USAC Classic Hall of Fame race for Silver Crown cars at Lucas Oil O'Reilly Raceway Park, where they're going to put many drivers in the USAC Hall of Fame. Also, the Little 500 is coming up, and I have been very blessed and fortunate that I've been contacted by Chris Windham's people, and they would like my help as a pit specialist and a tire specialist to come help during that race. That race is the night before the 500, and it is the highest paid sprint car race on pavement in the world. And also, not until May 22nd, then we have the Silver Crown cars at the State Fairgrounds 1 mile dirt, USAC Silver Crown cars, which is a Indianapolis tradition prior to the Big 500. So there's a lot going on. USAC National Sprint Cars are off until the 21st, and then they take an East Coast tour out to PA and New Jersey. So there's a lot of things going on, and I'm doing what I can and helping who I can.
That's cool, Tony. And I want to thank you for being a part of our little racing group, and thank you for doing what you do, Tony, and we appreciate you coming over. And, Tony, while I got you on, while I got Stephen Wilson on, I hope I don't embarrass him, but I want to give Stephen Wilson a big shout-out, a big kudos for starting this this radio network, the Speedway Digest radio network. And Stephen, he's been working on this for a few weeks, and I want to thank him very much for doing this. And, Stephen, you got the floor. I ain't got an applause button yet. I'll find one.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. We got a lot of racing going on this weekend out there, and not only Charlotte, but in Iowa. this year is a little different out of Charlotte, where we're going to run the showdown on Friday night to get somebody in the All-Star race instead of running them both on the same night. And there's some, you know, there's some vote-ins in the top 10 right now that are kind of surprising to see, with a couple of them just out there, Josh Wise, Eric Almirola,
wow,
AJ Allmendinger, Ambrose, and there's some very different names out there. Even Mears is on the list in the top 10 right now to be voted into the Sprint Showdown or the Sprint All-Star race come Saturday night. So got a lot of racing going on this weekend, and hopefully we'll get through it all.
Marcus Ambrose, I think one reason why he's running so good is he's charity-wise, is if he makes the show, if he's voted in, he's giving $25,000 to Victory Junction in honor of Adam Petty.
I didn't know that, Tony. That's cool.
Yes, that's very cool.
I thought he might have been, oh, Lord, if I say this, Robin Pember's going to kill him. I thought he might have been voted in for Cole Cock and Casey Mears. Well, sorry, I didn't say that, but my bad. My bad. I had to throw something out there at the end. Gentlemen, I've had a blast, and if Robin Pemberton hears that, he'll never call a show again. So, but anyway, Tony B, thank you, and Stephen Wilson, thank you very much, and we'll be in touch. And gentlemen, y'all have a great night, and I'm sure we'll all be texting and be in touch this weekend. And good luck to Jennifer Jo Cobb, and good luck to Robin Pemberton. Just like Stephen said earlier, there was no fines coming down from Kansas, but I got a feeling, well, not this weekend because it's All-Star race, but next weekend at Coke 600, there's probably going to be some fines coming down. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you, Tony B. Stephen Wilson, thank you. And, gentlemen, y'all have a great evening. We'll talk to y'all later.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you, Tim.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, good night.
Good night, yeah.